Hi, Simon Smart with you. Good to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Today I want to bring you an interview I did with the author Tim Winton, who's authored over 25 books. He's much known and loved for novels like Cloud Street, Dirt Music, The Riders and Breath. His latest novel is Airy, the story of a jaded and broken down environmentalist from Western Australia who, just when it feels like he might give up on life completely, finds a reason to keep on going, to keep on fighting. I talked with Tim Winton in the CPX studio. We talked about a whole lot of things, including the new book and matters of faith. Tim Winton, so good to have you in. Congratulations on the new book.
Thanks.
The key character in the story, in a sense, is a little boy, Kai, who's captured the heart of this sort of burnt out environmentalist. The boy's a bit odd, he's seen too much, and he's very vulnerable. There's a sense in my reading of this where he gives life to this guy who's falling. And my sense is the brutality of life is present in this book as it is in many of your books, and yet there are moments of tender grace. Is that a fair summary of this book?
Yeah, I think it is. I think this little boy, Kai, is an unwitting agent of grace. I think he's a sort of presence in this bloke's life after this guy, Keeley, has more or less, you know, taken out divorce proceedings against his fellow humans, and he's trying to prove the poet John Donne wrong, you know, that, you know, Dunn says no man is an island, and Keeley just, he wants to be, you know, he's had a gut full, he wants to be an island, but the, you know, the logic and the truth of the poem kicks in, and he finds that he is involved with mankind, and Kai's the means by which that happens, and he, just by his presence, all he really has to do is stand there before this bloke and not even mean to confront him, but as soon as this kid notices the man notices the boy, and he, by his presence, he's signifying that he needs help, you know. So he doesn't know he's doing it. He's a six-year-old kid who's got problems, but he's in a way, he's rescuing Keeley from himself, and he requires rescuing.
And this Tom Keeley character has been a bit of a warrior for the environment, and he's really burnt out by that. He comes to a spectacular fall from grace. Does he seem to me at least represent the forces of society, or the people in our society who want to do good, but they're powerless before the economic machine of progress and so on?
Yeah, I think there are people who have that kind of prophetic role in our society who have to get up every day and say unpalatable things, you know, speak to power, basically. You know, whether that's that, you know, whether they're people who are trying to spare the environment, or whether they're people who are trying to get social housing, or attention paid to mental health, some attention to the poor, and, you know, the culture at large. You know, the power in politics and media is looking elsewhere, studiously looking elsewhere. They're after the riches, and they're after the, you know, they're speaking easy, you know, speaking easy stuff and after easy stuff. And I'm sort of full of admiration for those people who are, you know, the voices in the wilderness crying out, saying, but what about this, what about that? They get up every day and they swim against the current, and they burn out, you know, a lot of them burn out. And I guess, having observed that, and also just having, you know, for those who don't burn out, I just wonder how do they keep going? What feeds their spirit? You know, what shores up their stubbornness? Yeah, Keeley's one of those guys who's crashed and burned. And as you say, he said something at a demo, which is true, but is catastrophic to his prospects. And he's unemployed, and his marriage has gone south, and he's lost a nice renovated house with the righteous Prius out the front.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity, and this is an interview we did with the author Tim Winton about his latest novel, Airy. I want to ask you about the characters in your writing who have some sort of faith. Like Nev Keeley, they're almost heroically practical. Is that a sort of a reflection of your experience of those sorts of people?
Perhaps so. And some of my, you know, heroes as a boy who were living people, and other people that I've read about as sort of cultural heroes. I mean, I think Nev is Keeley talks about him in the book, or remembers him as sort of, he's part Billy Graham and part Billy Jack. You know, he never knows whether to get, you know, someone in a half Nelson or kiss them in benediction. You know, I think the people who were important to me weren't people who were orthodox. They weren't people who had excellent theology, or you know, who were gifted at, you know, with liturgical skills or correctness. They were people who, in their messy lives, manifested grace, whose faith was, you know, was faith active in love, in a sense, as the old saying used to be. Who just didn't need to convince, who weren't in the business of convincing you of anything. They just, at certain moments in their lives, they embodied what they believed. And in the end, the older I got and the less obsessed I got with theology. I mean, I grew up in a fundamentalist environment. You know, I was the child of converts. And as I left the faith of childhood, which is a lot of the time a received faith, I was sort of questing the way young people do, and I was arrogant, like a young man often is. And I just thought it could all be organised theologically. But I was part of that tradition, and part of the weakness of our tradition is the obsession with orthodoxy, thinking the right thing. And I was probably only liberated from that in my late 20s, where I just realised that thinking the right thing was just kind of nice if you had the energy for it, but it wasn't the game. It was allowing yourself the space and the danger to perhaps do the right thing, or at least do something. You know, what you did was essentially an expression of who you were and what you believed.
I once interviewed a Salvation Army woman who was a saint, you know, spent her life caring for people. And she talked about her dad getting some help from the salvos when he was really sick, and he described it as Christianity with its sleeves rolled up. And he said, the only kind that's worth anything. And that sort of resonates a little bit with what you're describe.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if you're not interested in someone's body and their health, they're just not interested in them. You know, the rest of their person somehow is supposed to be. You know, we've almost got this idea that people's bodies or their you know, their health, their levels of poverty, their physical chance. Right, yeah, we are these disembodied spirits first and foremost, and their bodies are just some sort of inconvenience. You know, if it's not Christianity with sleeves rolled up, then what species of faith is it? What is that? And I'm not interested in that.
Would you agree that some of the best literature is, in a sense, theological in nature? Meaning this, it's about kind of the human condition, about brokenness and evil and human goodness, fallibility, sorrow, hope, those sorts of big themes.
Yeah, I guess. And I think, really, at its best, theology isn't really a science of knowing, as sometimes we get foxed into thinking. It's a speculative endeavour, and when it's at its best, it's closer to poetry and music than it is to
any kind of correct doctrine.
Yeah, and some sort of systematic doctrine. But yeah, I think I probably have learnt as much from as a novelist in a spiritual and theological sense, as I have from works of so-called pure theology, only because it's theology where you get to walk the idea around the park, you know, and you put some theological cattle on the paddock, you know what I mean? The rest of it seems very abstract, and I guess if there is an advantage for a novelist, it's even if you're not conscious of it all the time, and I'm certainly not, is that you're road testing your ideas in the lives and bodies of people who might not be real, but they're, if you're good enough as a novelist, they're real enough to you to stay with on the page, and as a reader, likewise.
When you think of Keeley, he finds a reason to live, but it's costly. Do you get a sense that anything that's really worth fighting for will take a personal toll?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, most of my historical religious heroes were Catholic, but the one who stands out, of course, is Bonhoeffer. And what does it cost a man who's a pacifist and an intellectual and an indoors waistcoat-wearing guy to have to climb down from his moral citadel and decide that he's going to have to take part in the assassination of Hitler, you know, and for that to all go horribly wrong, almost, you know, in ways that were, you know, unbelievable, really, and then for him to be executed almost when the war was over as an act of bastardry. And I think, you know, if people value their lives, they'll put some skin in the game, really, if they're truly, you know, valuing what's going on.
In this story, there's a key idea of wanting to reassure children that they're safe. There's a point where Keeley whispers to the boy, "We're okay," willing it to be the truth, and then later he says, "You're safe," he whispered prayerfully, needing it to be true, wanting to believe. Now, eventually, as adults, we realise we're not safe. So what can we truthfully tell the children? And I wonder what Nev Keeley might have said to the children.
What else can you say to a kid is that I'll do everything that I can to keep you safe. I'll do what I can. And I can't promise you it's going to be all right, but I'll promise you that, you know, I'll die making sure, I'll die trying, you know. But at certain points, you end up, whether you like it or not, having to lie to kids. And if you have to lie to make them feel safe, then so be it. And you know, the scene that you're referring to is, you know, is this kid has somehow cottoned on to the fact that, you know, there are all these birds have been poisoned in a South Coast town, and it's a you know, it's a real historical case. And he feels, you know, how do I reassure this kid, you know, and how deep does the lying go before I'm actually part of what's going on in the wider society, where I'm truly feeding this kid toxic untruths? And he wants to keep this kid safe, but he doesn't, and he finds himself in this moral quandary of how do I reassure this kid without lying to him? He's been lied to his whole life. He never feels he can trust people because all the adults in his life and the men in his life have been appalling.
There's a sense of that is childhood, maybe, that point where you, whether it's rightly or wrongly, have that sense of feeling safe. And it's the childhood that's missing for this little boy, isn't it? Because at no point could he really feel that until he meets Keeley, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, and it should be every child's right to assume without a second thought that you'll be looked after, that you'll be safe, that, you know, you'll have first and foremost safety and order in your life, and that there's someone there looking out to your best interest despite what they want, you know, themselves, and that they'll give up something for you. And when you meet children and see children whose lives aren't anything remotely like that, you know, it's so confronting. You just and you realise that there are people all around you who are living those lives as adults who were once those children, and sadly who are often, you know, replicating that for their own children or the children around them. You know, at a time when, you know, despite our great prosperity, there are people who are, you know, their form of shopping in despair's boutiques is addiction, I guess, and that's that stage that people get in their life where they're only living a kind of a squalid version of what the broader consumer culture is doing, is living as if there are no consequences to their actions, you know. So, you know, at one level, it's, you know, it's fine for us to be shaking our heads at someone who's not looking after their kid properly and who's not living as though everything that they do doesn't have a consequence to the young. And yet there are people at the very top of our society who are doing exactly that to millions of people who are living as though there are no consequences to their short-term actions.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed that interview with Tim Winton. You can hear more and see more of that interview if you go to the Centre for Public Christianity website. Hope you'll join me next time as we talk with Greg Clark about his latest book, The Great Bible Swindle. Catch you then.